Poked. How can you even do that?
Oscar hacked her and got into all her accounts when you stole her phone. Now, it's time to go.
He suddenly tore her out of Killian's arms and set her on her feet, before taking her hand and dragging her from the room.
Cameras are still down, he noted, checking his phone. We've got a few minutes. Killy will have to come and get you in the morning. Say goodnight to your not-gay best friend.
Goodnight, she started, but Moses was already pulling her through the door. He closed it and tugged her to Theodore's door instead, but he didn't open it. He took her by the shoulders and backed her into it.
I'm not very good at doing things out of the goodness of my heart, he admitted lowly,
planting his hands either side of her head on the door. He dipped forward, leaning his forearms on the door, bending until his lips hovered over hers.
Aren't you curious? Don't you want to know if our second kiss will feel like our first?
She licked her lips, too nervous to speak, before shaking her head.
Did you just lie to me?
He breathed out, his stormy eyes darkening. Slowly, she nodded.
Come to me,
he demanded in a whisper, refusing to press his lips against hers. No, she whispered back. He smiled, his breath misting her lips.
What color if I make you, Carter?
She didn't want to admit it. His lips skimmed her cheek, brushing against her ear.
Just nod,
he murmured. She jerked her head down, heat flooding her cheeks, and he rumbled with a groan, his body pressing into hers.
Come to me,
he repeated, this time in alpha voice. It was such a relief to press up on her toes and fit her lips to his. Moses made her feel alive. He filled her with fiery emotion and demanded she rise to meet him with every interaction, but he also made her dizzyingly nervous. She didn't want to come between him and Theodore, but the 10-foot wall they had propped between them had crumbled, leaving her to face the fact that there was a burning attraction between them, demanding to be acknowledged. He cupped her face, one of his hands falling to her neck as his tongue slipped into her mouth. The kiss was slow, heady, exploratory. It cut her open and left her bleeding and confused, reeling with so many conflicting thoughts that she quickly tore her mouth away. Red, she gasped. He didn't even look shocked. That made it worse. His thumb stroked across her jaw, his expression unreadable.
Night, Isabel.
She turned away, fumbled for the door, and disappeared into Theodore's room. He was sitting up in bed, staring at the door, his brow deeply furrowed.
He likes you,
was the first thing he said, and Isabel stopped short, her breath sawing in and out of her chest. Theodore's gaze traveled over her, coming to a rest on her face, his jaw tight and flexed.
He likes you, and I can't even blame him.
I think I messed up, she whispered.
No,
he interrupted.
You've just been your sweet, wonderful self. You haven't done anything wrong.
He patted the bed beside him, and she dragged her feet all the way there, flopping down beside him.
I've been thinking,
he murmured, shifting down to lay beside her. He opened his arm, and she curled into his side immediately.
If you weren't showing any interest in them, we might have ended up with a far bigger problem. I think your openness is the glue keeping us all in check right now. Oscar was so smug today, he might as well have been skipping along and singing with the fucking birds. I've never seen him so relaxed. He needed to know that you would accept his claim, and then he immediately backed off.
She stared at the ceiling, quietly listening to him vocalizing his thoughts.
Are you upset? Everyone expects you to overreact, and I think it's making me think the same way.
I want to rip off their hands every time they touch you, he admitted calmly. But I think it would be worse if you were unhappy.
You make me happy.
I know.
He rolled his head to the side, looking at her.
As amazing as you smell when you're turned on, you also smell a lot like my brother, and it's really off-putting right now.
Oh. She shook herself around on his sheets, making him crack a smile. Better?
No,
he grunted, tugging her on top of his hips. He sat up, pulling his shirt over his head, and then he tugged off her shirt, tossing it away from his bed before pulling his over her head, never once letting his eyes stray from her face. She thought he would be happy with that, but then he stood, picking her up in the same motion as he dragged her shorts down her legs. He tossed those and dropped back to the bed, sitting her back on his hips, the hem of his overlarge shirt pooling in her lap.
Better.
He squeezed her waist.
You can borrow my shirts too, you know.
Really? She felt her smile pushing into her cheeks.
Yeah.
He ran his hands down her thighs and then up again, slipping beneath the shirt to lightly circle her hips.
Fuck, you look good.
He quickly shifted her off, dropping her back to the mattress.
I'm glad you're here, Illy.
He turned her around, tugging the blanket around him as he pressed close behind her, his arm wrapping around her front.
Maybe there was something wrong with her, because all she could think about was how amazing he smelled and how much she desperately wanted him to touch her the same way he did the night she was released from the hospital.
I'm glad I'm here, too. She hugged his arm, feeling a persistent nudge of fear against her chest. She wasn't even sure if it was his or hers, but she was suddenly terrified that she might have to leave him the next day. She wasn't sure if she could.
Don't worry.
He nuzzled into her neck, his warmth spreading through her body.
I'll apply to visit whatever settlement you're in if you're not with me. I won't leave you.
She sucked in a shaky breath, and then turned around, his arm lifting to allow the movement before resettling over her. What if I have feelings? She whispered, already wanting to take the words back, or cry, or throw up. His eyes flicked between hers, his jaw flexing.
What kind of feelings?
She pulled his hand to her chest, pressing it over her pounding heart. Would that be okay?
Yeah, pretty. I think that would be fucking fine.
His voice was a growl, his alpha ring growing bigger, making his eyes appear darker.
Fuck the rules.
He grabbed the back of her neck and pulled her mouth to his tongue staking an immediate claim. After the turmoil of everything that had happened that day, kissing Theodore was like coming home, and a sob built up in the back of her throat, quickly swallowed by him as he eased her backward, rolling on top of her, his knee kicking one of her legs wide before he settled his hips to hers, rocking his erection against her. His kiss grew more demanding, his hands tearing his shirt off her body before she even realized what was happening. He paused, his forehead notched against hers, his body vibrating as he pulled in a few deep breaths.
You okay?
She whispered, touching his jaw.
Better.
He kissed her again, and then trailed kisses down her neck.
Just pent up. Don't want to lose control. Not going to fuck you tonight.
Why not? She asked, her mind full of his scent and the feel of his hands dragging down her sides. He grunted, ripping her panties and pulling them from her body in one ruined length of fabric. Shit. Sorry. He stared at his hand, and then at her, his eyes traveling slowly over her chest, following the chain embedded in her skin down to her belly button, and then dipping between her legs as he slowly pressed her knees apart. The breath left his chest in a heavy groan.
Right now, I can't think of a single reason why, but I know I don't want to rush you.
He lowered over her again, his mouth drawn to hers like a magnet, his tongue thrusting deep as his fingers clenched against her hips, his cock rocking between her legs again, though this time only his boxers separated them.
You want me to make you feel good again?
He rasped against her mouth. It was more of a demand than a question, but she nodded anyway. She felt something tickle against her hand, but ignored it as Theodore suddenly slid down the bed, forcing her knees wide apart, pressing them back against the bed, his tongue laving at the wetness he was creating between her thighs. Her body bowed, a whimper catching in the back of her throat as her hands flew to his head. He moved to her clit, showering it with attention until she was losing her mind. It was fast and hard, ruthless almost. He brought her to orgasm so quickly her breathy moans were interrupted by a hiccup of surprise. And then he climbed up her body again, propping himself up with one arm as he freed his cock, his knees trapping her legs together as he forced his hard length between her thighs, dipping it into the sticky, warm heat he had created. He thrust it in and out of the space between her thighs a few times, spreading her own honey over her skin, before he pulled it out and started stroking himself, his eyes dark, his teeth sinking into his lower lip, all of his glorious muscles tensed.
I was just going to focus on you, he gritted, but I need you covered. Need it all over you. You're fucking mine. Fuck.
He squeezed himself, and the first ribbon of white streaked across her chest, then her ribs, then her stomach. He kicked her knees wide, stroking himself a few more times as the final drips landed right on her pussy. She never would have thought she would be fantasizing about anyone covering her in their semen, but some primal part of her brain was glowing and preening at the stark claiming. Her fingers were twitching to push the drops on her pussy lips inside herself, but that might be going a little too far. He sat back, still hard, his length still twitching as he stared at her body, before his eyes crawled up to hers, shadowed with desire.
I wish I could keep you like this forever.
She swallowed, her voice husky as she said, This is a family-friendly show. He cracked a grin, leaning over her to kiss her softly.
I'll get a towel.
Despite the statement, he didn't move. He remained exactly where he was, eyes trailing leisurely over her, his dick still hard, his breath sucked sharply between his teeth.
Okay, going,
he rasped. He pulled his boxers back into place and disappeared into his bathroom, returning with a damp washcloth. He gently cleaned her up, but when he returned from the bathroom again and caught her reaching for his discarded shirt, a graveled sound of warning burst from his throat. He looked like he surprised himself, and he shook his head.
Sorry, baby. Cover up if you want to.
She held up her hands in surrender, a laugh building up in the back of her throat, and he rolled his eyes, pouncing onto the bed and rolling her into his body, tugging the blanket up around her before wrapping her into his arms and pressing his nose to the back of her head, inhaling her deeply. Her hand pricked again, and she glanced down, freezing at the hint of red on her skin. But it wasn't blood. It was only string. She raised her palm, and Theodore shifted behind her, his head lifting to also stare. The string was tied around her pinky finger,
the other end disappearing into the blanket. She rolled onto her back and blinked at Theodore, who was holding up his hand. The other end was tied to his pinky. There was the softest, most subtle glow to the thread, and it felt like it hummed. It began drawing their hands together, and Isabel laughed as their palms met, the thread only relaxing when Theodore forced her fingers to part, threading his between them. He didn't say a word, but he twisted behind her again, resting their clasped hands in front of her, where he could see them. He didn't feel tense, but she could tell that he stayed awake, just watching the thread, and she eventually drifted off to sleep before he did, her body filled with warmth and happiness. Chapter 21, Consolidation Day. She blinked her eyes open blearily, trying to clear the fogginess from her mind as the world spun around her dizzily, the bed falling away from her as she dropped onto something much harder than a mattress. The something grunted, and a male voice swore roughly.
"Nico? What was that?"
a woman's voice demanded.
"Is there someone in your bed?"
"Oka-san, mama, no."
Suddenly, a blanket was being tugged up over her head, Nico's hand gripping her shoulder underneath it, keeping her still.
"See? It's just me. I just kicked my foot on the end of the bed. Why did you call so early?"
The blanket was flipped back from her head, revealing Nico half sitting up in bed, his broad, muscled chest bare, his hand landing on her shoulder again and squeezing. He didn't look at her, though, keeping his attention on his phone screen. His mother was chattering on about a dream she'd had, and something called omikuji, and how it all meant something especially bad.
"Everything's fine, Oka-san,"
Nico sighed, his fingers still tightly holding Isabel in place.
"Are you getting sick?"
she demanded.
"No, I'm just tired. You woke me up."
"Okay, Nico-kun. Get some more sleep. Be careful today, okay? I'll text you later."
"Love you, Oka-san."
He hung up the call and tossed his phone aside, peeling his hand off Isabel one finger at a time as he stared down at her in shock.
"Are you naked, Carter?"
She was huddled between his legs, her hand still braced on his hard thighs, her mind completely still with shock.
"Would it be less awkward if I lied?"
she asked timidly.
"No."
He slitted his gaze.
"You smell..."
He breathed deeply, his pupils dilating.
"What were you doing?"
"Sleeping," she grumbled.
"It was very confusing to wake up like this."
She started to lift up, but his eyes suddenly widened and he yanked her back to his body, upsetting her balance and sprawling her across his chest.
"Shit,"
he swore, releasing her again.
"Sorry, I thought you were going to drop the blanket."
"You never seen a girl naked before?"
she asked, folding her arms over his chest and propping her chin up, since it didn't look like she was going anywhere anytime soon.
"Of course I have," he groaned, "but none of them were my mate."
"Does your mom know about them?" He glared at her.
"I'm starting to see why you need a safe word."
She gasped, a laugh building in the back of her throat, and Nico's lips twitched like he was thinking of laughing as well.
"I don't think it's very common to discuss your sexual experiences with your parents,"
he said.
"So that would be a no."
"What difference does me being your mate make?" she asked, cocking her head to the side. His hand flashed up, brushing away the strand of hair that had slipped over her cheek. He glared at his own hand like it had acted without his permission, before dropping it to the bed.
"It means something different."
His gaze traced her face.
"Anything I do with you will mean something different."
"Like what?"
"All right, naked girl, that's enough."
He carefully bundled her into the blanket and was lifting her from the bed like a burrito when Theodore burst into the room.
There you are, Theodore grumbled, kicking the door shut, relief written all over his face. Here I am, Nico drawled sarcastically. And I have a naked Sigma. What should I do with her?
Feed her,
Isabel whisper shouted, freeing one of her arms to pump her fist into the air.
Okay.
Nico dropped her back onto the bed.
I'll fetch Killian to sneak you back into his room. Then we can go get some breakfast.
She nodded, clutching at the top of the blanket. Theodore gave her a droll look as Nico left.
You gave me a heart attack. Even the string was gone.
I'm pretty sure it's wrapped around me, she replied, feeling around with the hand that was still stuck inside the blanket. Sure enough, the string had become tangled around her waist. What should I do with it?
Anything but cut it,
he answered seriously.
I need to take a picture to show the others.
She struggled to her feet and then wiggled the blanket loose, parting it along her side. Theodore caught her hip and snapped a quick picture of her naked waist before pulling the blanket back around her. Nico returned with Killian a second later before disappearing into his bathroom. Killian gave her an amused look, sweeping her into his arms and striding out of the room. He deposited her in his bathroom, leaning close, his cheek brushing hers.
You smell amazing. Did you sleep well?
A smile broke over her face.
I got another soul artifact.
She parted the blanket again, and his fingers splayed across the red string, plucking it gently.
Thread?
He asked.
Wrapped around you?
No, it tied me and Theo together by our pinkies.
Well, that's disgustingly adorable.
He reared back, checking to see if she was serious, before he laughed.
How do I get myself a disgustingly adorable soul artifact, now that you're giving them out again?
She shrugged. Ask me nicely?
Cute.
His expression grew serious, his pale eyes digging into hers, his face unreadable, before he suddenly backed off.
The Consolidation Day Festival will kick off soon, and you still need to pack for the holidays. I'll let you shower.
He stepped out, but paused in the doorway, tapping his fingers against the frame.
It's nice seeing you happy, Illy. We should have guessed the key to your smile was dancing.
He lingered a moment longer, just staring at her, before he forced a smile and disappeared. She wasn't sure what to make of that comment, but luckily he hadn't stuck around for a response. She raced through a shower and picked out one of her designer dresses for the day, since she wasn't going to do any training for once. It was a pretty pale yellow, a diagonal panel dress with ladder trims stitching each section together. The neckline was a soft diagonal slash that looped over one shoulder, a loose chiffon sleeve falling down her arm. The other sleeve was attached to the bodice, and it hung from her bicep. She tucked her phone, which Killian had put on charge, into her over-the-shoulder bag, and added the red string in case any of the others needed to examine it in person. She brushed out her hair and slipped her feet into some tan sandals before planting herself in the living room to wait for the others. After a minute, she pulled out her phone to sort through the notifications. Theodore had posted the picture of her string-bound waist to the group chat she was in, and it seemed like he had done it without an explanation. Oscar.
The fuck? Are we choosing outfits again?
Killian.
That is not an outfit. That is a piece of string.
Kian.
Some outfits are pieces of string.
Moses.
No, those outfits are still just string.
Nico.
I don't understand. She was naked when she came to me, but you took that while she was still in my room?
Elijah.
Rewind. Explain.
Nico.
Isabel teleported to my bed half asleep while I was on a video call with my mom.
Nico.
And she was naked.
Mikkel, admin.
A habit of hers, I'm afraid. Although, the nakedness is new.
Gabriel.
Not as new as you might think.
Oscar is typing. Oscar has been muted. Kaylin,
Admin.
Is that a soul artifact?
Killian.
Yes, it is.
Theodore.
Sorry, was in the shower.
Gabriel.
When did it appear?
Theodore.
Last night. Tied around our pinkies.
Moses.
Wow. I just vomited in my mouth.
Killian.
You weren't vomiting in your mouth when Isabel was manipulating the shit out of you last night.
Kian.
I would kill for tickets to that show.
Killian.
It was highly entertaining.
Oscar has been unmuted. Kaelin, admin.
What were you doing when the string appeared?
Theodore.
Platonic bonding.
Mikkel, admin.
Isabel.
The messages stopped there, and she swallowed, typing out a hesitant reply. Isabel. I'm not sure how much detail I'm supposed to go into. Kaelin, admin.
Jesus Christ. Did any of you follow the goddamn rules?
Isabel. What rules? Oscar.
Not a chance.
Moses.
No.
Killian.
Yes.
Theodore.
No.
Elijah.
Obviously.
Gabriel.
Don't insult me.
Nico.
Of course.
Oscar and Moses were chuckling as they strode into the lounge, both looking her up and down as she quickly pulled to her feet.
Morning, rich girl.
Oscar mumbled, rocking back on his heels and shoving his hands into his pockets as he surveyed her dress.
Don't you smell nice today?
So everyone keeps saying. She eyed him, trying to figure out if he was being sarcastic or not. Moses only nodded at her, his stormy eyes doing another pass over her dress. Ready for the festival? She asked, as Nico walked toward them from the hallway, followed by Elijah and Gabriel.
Ready as I'll ever be,
Moses grumbled, moving to the front door, and shouting over his shoulder,
Hurry up, we're hungry.
Wonder why?
Kian asked, shouldering past everyone to drop an arm over Isabel's shoulder, his nose brushing along her hairline. He sniffed her, but didn't comment on her smell. She glanced up into his face, noting that his expression was a little drawn. Any more dreams? He shook his head.
I didn't pull your card.
What do you mean?
The moon card.
His mouth was tight.
I draw it every morning. This morning, I didn't.
That could mean anything, right? She asked. The others were staring at Kian, and she felt a few flashes of worry and panic before they managed to control their reactions. He nodded at her, but didn't answer otherwise, steering her toward the door as Theodore and Killian joined them.
Mickey and Kaelin are going to meet us at the festival,
Killian explained. Isabel checked her phone again, combing through the rest of her notifications. Nothing from Sophia. She tapped on their conversation and sent a message. Isabel, everything still good? The reply was almost instant. Sophia.
Yes, and no more dreams.
Sophia.
I think whoever it was, the increased security must have messed up their plans.
She resolved herself to keep a close eye on Kian for the rest of the day, but she barely needed to, because he refused to leave her side. He stayed with her as she picked out what to eat for breakfast, and sat silently beside her as she ate. As soon as she shifted to leave the booth, he was jumping up, a step behind her as she disposed of her tray. The others were giving him worried looks, but nobody said anything, even when he looped his arm around her and bent to sniff her hair every now and then, as though reassuring himself that she wasn't hurt in any way. They loitered along the edges of the festival for most of the morning, lounging in lawn chairs and watching the Hollywood parade as it wound its way around the lake. They chatted quietly, completely ignoring the speeches of the returning guest icons as they reminisced on their golden days at Ironside and how winning the game changed their lives forever. Kaelin and Mikkel joined them as the top 10 icon contenders took to the stage, saying a few quick words about what Ironside has meant to them and what they were going to do if they won.
Let's get closer, Mikkel suggested, forcing them all to pull themselves together and push through the crowd. They moved toward the action, the other students giving them plenty of room. The stage had been built out over the lake, leaving enough space for everyone to gather at the front of the academy. There were snack booths set up along the sides of the paths, and lawn chairs scattered around the outskirts for students to relax in. Twinkling strings of lights crisscrossed overhead, strung tightly from wooden pillars, and everyone seemed happy, excited to be going home in the overnight buses later. Some of them would be dropped off at airports with return tickets home, while the rest would travel by bus, depending on how far away their settlements were. She imagined they would be the superstars of their settlements for as long as they were at Ironside, receiving a hero's welcome home as everyone tried to get them to spill the behind-the-scenes secrets they were contract-bound to keep. The first icon contender stepped forward, holding a microphone up and winking at the audience as his music started. No matter their specialization, they always performed a song, danced, played an instrument, or did some sort of stand-up routine on Consolidation Day. It was more about entertaining people than showing off their skills. It was nearing early afternoon when a female official stepped onto the cleared stage to announce the icon winner. Isabel squinted at her. "Isn't that the woman from the dining hall the other morning?"
"Looks like it,"
Elijah replied.
"Frisk," Kaelin supplied. "Her name is Olivia Frisk. She's the on-site assistant to the director of Ironside."
"Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, esteemed faculty members, distinguished guests, and students of Ironside,"
Frisk boomed into the microphone.
"We are gathered here today to celebrate not just the founding of Ironside, but the profound unity it has brought to our world. It is a day of reflection and celebration as we acknowledge the work that Ironside has done to bring the gifted and the humans together. From its inception, Ironside Academy was intended as a place where we could transcend the boundaries of what everyone thought to be possible. Because of Ironside, we are able to lift the gifted, one by one, out of the settlements and bring them to this paradise, giving them every little luxury they could ever ask for, with the most skilled cultural experts our world has to offer at their disposal. The Ironside Initiative is a testament to the power of unity, compassion, and creativity. So, as we announce this year's icon, let us remember that only together can we achieve the impossible."
She paused as cheers rose through the gathered crowd before speaking again.
"This year at Ironside has been nothing short of exhilarating, and if there's one specialization that has consistently captivated our attention over the last year, making us tune into our screens with bated breath, it's the world of dance. Therefore, with no further delay, I have the privilege to present this year's icon, and it should come as no surprise to you all what her specialization is. Her dance ability has left us all in awe, and as sad as we are to see her leave Ironside, we're ecstatic to announce that she will be joining the Paris Opera Ballet. We expect big things of her in the future. Please join me in giving an enormous round of applause for the remarkable Astrid Johansson."
A familiar, petite, blonde beta bounded across the stage. Isabel was sure that she had seen the other girl hanging out with Nico on and off screen, and she was so distracted by intrusive thoughts about whether or not she was one of the girls he had already seen naked that she didn't hear the sound at first. The familiar pop, pop, pop that still haunted her dreams. It wasn't until the screaming started that she realized what was happening, and by then, it was already too late. The crowd surged in an instant panic, all of them trying to push and shove their way to safety. Isabel was toppled over with several other people, and all she could do was hold her arms over her head as a rush of feet threatened to trample her.
Kian managed to fight his way back to her side, and he picked her up by the arms, forcing her up until her head broke the crush of people and she could breathe again. He started forcing his way through the rush, holding her steady with one arm.
"The others!" she shouted, tugging at his arm.
"They can look after themselves," he said. "But you'll get crushed."
Another round of shots rang out, and Kian ducked, the crowd surging again. She was torn away from him, people shoving her backwards as they clambered toward the stage. She strained to keep her head above it all, spotting Kian with a bloody nose, pushing people out of his way. When his eyes found her again, he pointed behind her.
"That way,"
he shouted. She immediately stopped fighting the pushing and shoving of the crowd, allowing them to fight in Kian's direction while she squeezed in the other direction until she could suddenly duck and weave between the panicked students. She caught sight of the chapel, now running toward it at full speed, her heart threatening to burst out of her chest. She was almost at the door when the first wave of dizziness hit her. Her vision blurred, and her heartbeat slowed to a crawl, dark spots flashing over her vision. The feeling was accompanied by a sharp flash of memory, a blade cutting into her arm, and Eve's scathing voice in her ear. "Eve." She forced herself to stumble forward, collapsing against the doorjamb to keep herself upright as the screams and gunshots warbled into a strange cloud of sound. The pressure against her head doubled, making her fall forward, a groan catching in the back of her throat as she stumbled into the chapel and caught herself on her hands as her body hit the floor. She flopped onto her back, trying to force away the dizziness, to pull herself up and lock the door. But Eve was already there, stepping into the opening, her blue eyes clearly shining with smugness, even with Isabel's blurry vision.
"Well, this all turned out rather well, didn't it?" Eve asked. "I've been following you around for weeks, waiting for my moment."
Her gaze flickered up, focusing on something behind Isabel. Sophia stalked forward, her short dark hair flopping up and down with how fast she moved, and then suddenly her fist connected with Eve's face.
"Not today, bitch."
Sophia shoved against Eve as Maya knelt beside Isabel, pulling her up into a sitting position. Eve stumbled back, clutching her nose as blood spurted through her fingers.
"What the fuck?" she snapped. "Who the fuck even are you?"
Sophia shoved her backward and then slammed the door in her face and locked it before collapsing against the wood, looking pale and sweaty, her hands shaking. She shook her head like she was trying to clear away a fog in her mind, Eve's power somehow working on both of them at once, before she turned to the side and shouted through the door,
"A real friend, you psycho!"
"Isabel."
Maya was touching her forehead.
"What's going on out there?"
"Shooter," Isabel slurred.
"You're going to pay for that!"
Eve collided with the other side of the door, her fists pounding against it.
"You're all going to pay for that! Shit, he's coming!"
She suddenly backed away from the door. Sophia stumbled away, looking at the door in horror.
"He's coming? Who's coming?"
"Soph," Maya snapped. "Get away from the door. Luis, get behind the podium. Is the back door locked?"
"Yes, Mama."
Luis's voice trembled like he was crying, and he squeaked when he ran into something, knocking it against the floor.
"Get down on the ground, Luis,"
Maya ordered over her shoulder, helping Isabel to her feet. Sophia grabbed Isabel's other arm as the effect of Eve's power began to wear off, and the three of them stumbled toward where Luis was hiding.
"I saw you go in there, Carter."
Heavy fists crashed against the chapel door, and Isabel ducked away from the other two women, pushing them toward the dais when they tried to grab onto her again. She turned to face the door, dread dropping into her stomach.
"Carter!"
Fists rained down on the door. It was Crow. Just as she considered darting out through the back door and calling his attention away from the chapel, He fired off a round of shots, breaking apart the lock. She bit back a scream, ducking into one of the vestibules lining the side of the room, pressing up against the thin wall and covering her mouth to muffle her terrified breathing. She had to do something, or the others were going to get hurt. But she didn't know what to do.
"I know you're in here."
Wood splintered beneath Crow's boots as he slowly stepped inside.
"I'll shoot this whole place up if I have to."
Luisa's dream was coming true, and it was all because of her. She had run straight to the chapel, thinking they might be in danger. Kian was right. Believing in things did half the work of fate. She waited until Crow was almost in line with her vestibule before she slipped out, scooting around him to put his back to the dais. He raised his gun immediately. It was long, bigger than she expected. He even had ammunition clips strapped to his belt. He was prepared.
"There you are,"
he snarled, leveling the gun at her face. "Get out of here," she said, keeping her eyes on Crow and hoping the others were smart enough to leave while she was giving them an opportunity to. She wasn't worth an extra 3 lives.
"I'm not going anywhere," Crow spat. "You ruined my life, you little cunt."
She caught the barest glimpse of movement over his shoulder. It looked like Maya, Sophia, and Luis were moving toward the back door. She needed to keep Crow talking.
"How did I do that?" she asked.
"First, the track team told me to ruin your reputation. Even promised that Eve would help with her power. Then your stupid boyfriend comes after me."
He took a step closer, staring at her dress like it personally offended him.
"But they never really wanted to recruit me. I was just pathetic enough to employ as a tool. They recorded me doing what they told me to do, and then used it to blackmail me. They used me to get to you and then tossed me out like garbage as soon as they had you. But you never really escaped the track team. You know that, don't you? You know they own you now. And I'm going to make sure to sink their precious little investment."
Isabel flinched when the back door opened, a bright shaft of light angling into the room. But Crow didn't seem to notice it. He was focused on the slow steps backward she was taking, carefully matching them with steps forward as he kept the gun pointed up. One of the shadows paused in the doorway, and Isabel chanced a quick look up, catching the way Sophia held her fingers up to her head, gesturing a phone. Isabel yanked her phone out of her pocket and held it up just as Crow's arm twitched, his heavy brows dragging down in fury.
"Throw it," he ordered, "or I blast your head off right now."
She flicked it over her shoulder, close enough to the door to feel where the opening was by the breeze creeping in against her back. She heard it scatter and slide off the chapel steps, and Crow reached around her, wedging the broken doors closed as Sophia finally disappeared from the back door, closing it at the same time. Hopefully, she would get to Isabel's phone and call one of the alphas, because Isabel wasn't sure she would be able to overpower Crow on her own. She had tried that once, and there were no candlesticks within reach this time.
"So what should I do?"
Crow asked, his foul, stale sweat smell washing over her before he backed off.
"Give you a few more scars?"
He tilted his head, looking her over.
"Shoot out your kneecaps? Send them back a cripple. You want to be a cripple, bitch?"
She winced, leaning back against the door and keeping her mouth shut. He took another step away, planting the barrel of his gun against her cheek.
"Or I could shoot a hole through your face. See how much better than me you think you are when you're just as ugly."
He lowered the gun, brushing it across her chest and pressing it low against her stomach.
"Or maybe I'll have a little taste of what you're handing out to all the alphas first. Maybe if you're a good enough fuck, I'll let you keep one of your legs. What do you say?"
She averted her eyes from his face as his meaty tongue poked out to lick his lips, her attention zeroing in on the painting hanging above the dais. She had no idea which of the gifted gods it was, but she was willing to try anything. So she closed her eyes and begged.
Please, help me. I'll do anything you want. If you're real, help me.
Are you praying?
Crow suddenly laughed, backhanding her across the face and forcing her head to whip to the side. Her eyes flew open.
Those gods aren't real, you dumb slut.
Her chest began to tingle as tears tracked down her face, blood filling her mouth. He must have split her lip.
Please, let me go,
she rasped, rubbing at the pain in her chest before realizing what it was. She froze, pulling at the neckline of her dress to stare down at the chain. A new gemstone had appeared, stormy gray and glowing lightly. She choked on the sudden taste of ash spilling into the back of her throat.
What's wrong with you?
Crow lowered his gun, his eyes fixed to the subtle glow shining through her dress.
What is that?
He jerked the gun back up.
Take it off and show me. Now!
He fired a warning shot through the door over her shoulder, and her vision wavered, flashing dark and then suddenly vividly bright. Her breath was a rasp, pain sluicing through the tips of her fingers. She ducked as Crow leveled the gun at her head, his eyes widening in panic, and the second shot punched through the door where her head had been as she dove forward, knocking him off balance, the gun scattering against the ground.
Get off me!
He shouted, but she paid no attention. Her throat was full of scorching sulfur, her eyes seeing only objects for her to tear her claws into. There was some sort of wiggling prey beneath her, and his whining noises needed to be silenced. She tore through the gun, breaking off the barrel and using it to hit away at the whining thing until the annoying noises turned into garbles, and then silence. She stood and kicked the lifeless thing aside, enjoying the way the items around her splintered into cracks when she wedged her claws into them.
Illy. Another prey, though this one didn't smell as foul.
She bounded toward it, but a strong grip caught her wrists, trapping her against something hard. She snarled, but the prey were closing in on her, bodies surrounding her, the hard thing behind her rumbling with a deep voice.
Time to come back to us, Carter. I need you to listen to my voice very carefully and try to say these words with me, okay?
She thrashed, trying to get her claws into the voice box behind her to silence it.
10, he said. Try to breathe. 9, 8, 7.
She almost managed to dislodge them, but then more hands were holding her, restricting her movement, leaving her to twitch and snarl, biding her time until one of them slipped up.
6, the infuriating voice continued. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
And then he started again, and again, and again. Eventually, the vivid colors started to fade, and she began to blearily recognize the faces. She gave one last desperate tug, but there were so many of them restraining her, and she fell limp against the body behind her, as Theodore's face registered in her brain. His face was bleeding, a short cut along his chin dripping onto his shirt. Moses was beside him, his arms covered in cuts, his stormy eyes focused. Mikkel was behind her, Kaelin and Oscar both helping to hold her arms. She drew in a shuddering breath, her chest caning in pain.
What happened?
Don't worry about that right now.
Elijah appeared in her line of sight.
Just keep breathing.
Try to slow it down.
She felt like she was hyperventilating, panic crashing through her in wave after wave. Slowly, they began to release her. But as soon as Moses backed off, she caught sight of Crow by the entrance. He wasn't moving. She stumbled toward him, but Mikkel stepped into her path, shaking his head. She collapsed to her knees, a wail catching in the back of her throat.
I didn't...
She stared down at her hands, at the blood coating her all the way to her armpits.
I didn't...
Hey.
Mikkel crouched before her, catching her face and forcing her eyes to his.
Just focus on me, okay? Everything's fine. You're safe. You couldn't control it.
Is he dead?
She hiccuped through her sobs, feeling her chest crack open. Their fear, fury, and shock poured into her, flooding her as she wavered, Mikkel switching his grip to her arms to keep her upright.
He's gone, he said lowly. It was the ferality, Isabel. Not you. Don't take this on. He was going to kill you. He killed dozens of people out there. Isabel,
Elijah said sharply.
Stop. I can feel that. Stop.
Alpha voice. She dragged her walls back up.
Wasn't deliberate.
It's okay.
Mikkel dragged her against his chest, cupping the back of her head.
It's okay, sweetheart. You're going to be okay.
She thought she could hear sirens in the distance.
We need to do something about the body,
Gabriel said,
and we need to hide her.
Mikkel picked her up, drawing her away from Crow and keeping her face stuck against his chest. He set her down again on the other side of the room, shrugging out of his jacket and pulling it over her dress, zipping it up so that all the blood was hidden.
Well, it worked once.
Nico picked up a lighter and one of the decorative lanterns set into one of the little alcoves cut into the wall. He smashed the lantern against the ground, liquid splashing out of it, and the others immediately moved to copy him, smashing the rest of the lanterns before Nico set the lighter against the ground, igniting little fires where the lanterns were soaking the ground. For a moment, they all just stood there, watching the flames lick at the ground. She couldn't stop crying or shaking, but Nico met her eyes, his expression calm and capable.
Don't worry,
he said gently.
We'll protect you. You don't need to watch this,
Elijah said.
Go straight to the guardian's house.
He opened the back door, holding it for her.
We'll be there after we make sure this fire takes off. Go straight there. No detours.
He pulled her phone out of his pocket.
Take this with you. Sophia called us with it.
She nodded, desperate to get away from the sight of flames teasing closer and closer to the bloodied body. She rushed out of the chapel, the sound of sirens growing closer, and was just pushing through the gate when her phone vibrated. She pulled it out, saw her father's name, and accepted the call.
I'm safe,
she said, figuring that was why he was calling.
Good. Go straight to the front of the academy. Now! Don't stop to talk to anyone or help anyone. Don't try to grab any of your belongings.
He barked out the order in alpha voice, the command already forcing her limbs to move.
Wait, I...
He hung up the call, and she swore as her body automatically turned in the other direction, pushing back through the gate. What if he was hurt? She picked up the pace, making sure Mikkel's long sleeves were covering her bloody hands as she ran to the front of the academy, barely able to process the sight of bodies scattered across the grass, groups of terrified people hovering around them. She passed through the gates as the flashing lights of several ambulances and police cars appeared along the road leading toward the first gate into Ironside. Her father appeared in front of her, his hands clasping her arms.
We're leaving early,
he said, his words barely registering. He didn't look hurt. He began dragging her to a limousine idling at the curb, and she dug her heels in, trying to yank out of his grip.
No, I can't.
Get in the damn car, Isabel,
he snapped, his alpha voice making her head bow and her blood run cold as he successfully shoved her through the car door.
We're not staying here a second longer. Who knows what could happen?
Cesar Cooper and her father's publicist were already in the car, along with several bags and briefcases. They had been packing up while students were being slaughtered.
You have to let me out, she tried again. My surrogates!
I don't have to do anything,
Braun spoke over her, before barking at the driver, his assistant, to hurry up and leave.
Do you have anything to calm her down?
He turned to Cesar next, who nodded, digging into his briefcase and pulling out a little bottle of pills, which he tossed to her father. Braun shook out several pills before grabbing her chin and forcing her mouth open.
Swallow them,
he commanded, snapping her jaw shut. Her throat obeyed without her permission, and she tried to calm down and think of a plan as her father turned away from her, his voice loud and grating beside her as he launched into a tirade about the dangerous rise of anti-loyalists and how the government wasn't doing anything to cripple them. Cripple. She shuddered at the word, her eyes closing tightly, panic lacing tight and hot through her body. You're safe. You're okay. Nobody is going to hurt you. She tried to believe it, as her mind rioted, remembering the feel of metal pressing against her face.
You'll find your way back to them.
Her head started to lull, her thoughts turning fuzzy.
What did you give me?
She slurred, cracking open an eye. Braun and Cesar continued the conversation as though she hadn't even spoken.
What did you...
She swallowed, wondering why her mouth was suddenly so dry.
What?
Her body grew cold and numb, her forehead sagging toward the window, resting there as her mind sank into blackness. To be continued. Bonus scene. Where in the world is Carter?
Kalin made sure everyone was out of the chapel ahead of him before he paused at the back door, his attention fixed to the body now heavily engulfed in flames. There was a tight ball of fear permanently lodged inside his chest. He saw Isabel go down in the crowd, but after knocking down and injuring at least 6 people as he fought his way over to her, he realized he had completely lost sight of where she was. That was when it started. The fear that refused to budge. They couldn't lose her again. She was his responsibility now. He promised to protect her. She had only been out of his sight for a few minutes, but it was a few minutes too long, so he slammed the door and followed the others around to the Guardian's residence. They were going to need to get out of there soon, just in case the fire caught into the attached house. Theodore was the first inside after hurriedly knocking on the door, and the rest of them quickly filled the kitchen. Kalin closed the door behind him, peering over the others to the Guardian standing in the opposite doorway. She was also peering, searching their faces. For who?
Where is she?
Maya asked, a flicker of horror racing across her expression. Did you get to her? Where?
He fell forward a step, that fear growing heavier, making it hard to breathe.
Is Isabel here?
No,
the Guardian stuttered.
She...
Oscar shoved through them, shocking Maya into silence. Kalin shoved open the door just as Oscar got to him, and all 10 of them rushed out of the house, running back to the chapel. They searched around it as Theodore called her number once, twice, 3 times. She's not answering, he swore, his eyes pulsing black. She's fine, Kalin said, keeping Theodore in his sights. We would feel it like last time, remember? She's okay. We just need to find her. I'm going to kill someone, Oscar was pacing, his eyes darting about. I don't know who, but I'm going to... Her father, Elijah suddenly announced, stalking off. There's no way he's going to stick around here with shots being fired. They followed Elijah to the family center, all of them squeezing into the elevator as Mikkel punched the button for Braun Carter's floor. Kaelin kept his attention on Moses and Theodore the whole time, wary of the way their faces kept twitching. Mikkel didn't bother knocking on Braun's door. He kicked it open, splintering the lock, and they immediately split up to search the apartment. No brawny motherfucker here to complain about his door being kicked in, Elijah noted, stopping only a few feet into the room. That's not a good sign. Kaelin waited, having come to the same conclusion, the fear growing and growing. Nobody here. Gabriel strode back into the living room. Looks like they packed in a rush. Fuck! Theodore suddenly shoved one of the armchairs, his eyes flashing black so fast that Mikkel barely had time to dive over the coffee table and tackle him before the ferality kicked in. Shit. Moses wavered. He was fighting it, but he was going to lose, and everyone knew it. Elijah and Gabriel moved to help Mikkel, freeing up the rest of them to deal with Moses. Fuck! Moses gripped the back of a couch, his talons extending and ripping into the material. Kian ducked as Theodore managed to throw Gabriel at him, the two of them tripping over the coffee table. Everyone else help with Theo, Kaelin demanded in alpha voice. Me and Oscar have Moses. Killian and Kian had already jumped in to try and pin Theodore, but Nico was hovering back, waiting to see who would need him more. He helped up Gabriel and Kian, and the three of them moved to surround Theodore. Moses' eyes exploded with darkness, a growl building up in the back of his throat as Kaelin and Oscar drew closer to him. Finally, Oscar drawled, rolling up his sleeves. Let's get this after party started.
This has been Sauté, Ironside Academy, Book 3. Written by Jane Washington. Narrated by Jennifer Sterling. Copyright 2023 by Jane Washington. Production copyright 2023 by Jane Washington.